to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, we love our ice fishing in the state, and today's show is all about ice fishing. Skip Sommerfeld is our resident angler, a retired Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources fish biologist. And as we talk with Skip, I hope you'll join in with your own questions about ice fishing. Maybe you've got some stories to tell as well. Does your family participate? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Skip Sommerfeld, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hello. Glad to be back and talking fishing again with you, Larry.
Do you have some good fish stories to share from the past year?
This winter has been tough so far. Summer bass fishing and walleye fishing was okay, but boy, these winter conditions that we're having right now, I think don't bode well for a good winter of ice fishing, especially up north.
So what's the problem?
The problem is we had an early ice cover, and we had about 4 or 5 inches of ice. And then we had that warm spell over Thanksgiving, and that softened the ice cover up. And then we put about 6 to 8 inches of snow on top of that. And when you put snow on top of early ice, it weighs it down, and you get slush conditions, and that softens the ice up. And then Thursday, we had about 11, 12 inches of heavy, wet snow on the ice, and that pretty much shut down all ice travel on the lakes up north. I think down south here it's a little better. They didn't get quite the snow conditions we did. And, in fact, I just took a drive around. I'm down in Wisconsin Dells and took a ride around Lake Delton. And it actually looks like they have pretty good conditions. And there were even a few ice anglers out on the lake down there. But up north, it's tough conditions. I was out Monday, measured 10 inches of cover. I call it ice cover. But the top 2 inches was just a crust. There were 2 to 3 inches of slush, and then 4 to 5 inches of just really soft ice. And there's areas of slush that are almost knee-deep in areas on the lakes. And, in fact, on Facebook, I saw one of our local sport shops, the owner canceled all ice fishing trips until further notice because the ice conditions just are not safe up north.
That is really too bad. You know, you think about the amount or number of fish that are taken. I was reading somewhere, it said about almost a quarter of all the fish taken in Wisconsin are taken through the ice.
That's true, especially on the panfish side. Panfish are, you know, especially popular in the winter. And, you know, a lot of people just look forward to their crappie bluegill fishing. You know, they bring their pop-up tents out there on the ice and their electronics, and, you know, they look forward to that. But, boy, just access to the lakes up north is going to be difficult. Yeah. You know, and it's probably a good warning to any, you know, anglers looking to go up north to do it is, you know, be prepared for some sloppy conditions, poor access. Yeah, really poor access. In fact, in the last week, I saw on Facebook somebody had 3 vehicle recovery incidents they had to go to and pull either side-by-sides, ATVs out, snowmobile, I guess, on one, but 3 different incidents within about a 3-day period. Just, you know, people thought it would be safe, but the heavy snow you know, it sinks the ice, softens it up in currents, opens up, you know, makes for thin areas and people drop through, and you got to pay to get your vehicle out. You know,
it's an expensive process because you have to get, typically you might have to get a scuba diver who is going to be charging you quite a bit of money. And so forth. I knew one fellow whose car went through, and then he had to get a scuba diver from, I don't know, 60, 70 miles away to come over, hook the car up. He went back home, and then when they pulled it out, they started to pull it out. The chain or whatever it was broke or got loose. So they had to call him back and come again. Well, so it cost.
Well, there are recovery companies, you know, that have special equipment, you know, frames they put over the holes and even ramps that they put down and, you know, pull the vehicle back up on. But it's like, oh, it's just not worth it to me. You know, a meal of fish, you know, we like our Friday night fish fries, but, you know, $15 fish fry, I think, is a lot easier than going out and risking, you know, a $10,000 bill to get your vehicle out of the ice.
Well, there are still, you know, central southern Wisconsin, for sure, there's still some good opportunities, I think, or there will be some good opportunities for fishing out there. At least let's hope there is. And let's talk a little bit about the kinds of fishing methods for those who aren't familiar with them. And we've got tip-ups and we've got jig fishing, basically. But let's talk about tip-ups first. Is that your preferred method? Or?
Yes, the tip-ups are my preferred method. It's a more passive way of doing it. In Wisconsin, you're allowed three lines, so you can put three tip-ups out, and that's what most people do. Early season, you know, a lot of people pursue walleyes, and probably secondly is northern pike. And, you know, both are pretty active early winter. For tip-ups with walleye, you know, this time of year, which I consider probably still early ice, I usually like to fish the mud flats, the weed edges in anywhere from 6 to 10 feet of water. And as the walleyes are still cruising, looking for bait fish such as baby bullheads, you know, schools of little perch for feeding on. So you set your lines, your tip up lines, you know, you try to find those hot spots. And one of the things I've always said is I pretty much target walleyes when I tip up fish. And, you know, anybody who has set tip ups out, you know, you get a group, you can set 12 tip ups out, and there's one or two holes that are steadily the flags popping and catching fish. And what I found is, I swear, that walleyes develop feeding trails. You know, just like a white-tailed deer will have a, you know, follow a trail every, you know, feeding trail pattern. And I swear walleyes have the same thing. They have feeding trails underneath the water. And if you find that hot hole, you mark it, you know, either GPS it or my old-fashioned way, line up the tree on the shoreline with another corner of a house and and re-drill that same hole. And it is amazing how, you know, successful that is, because you hit a feeding trail and it seems to work.
So are you a guy that uses the beaver dam type tip-ups, or are you one of these guys that uses those round ones that you put over the tip-ups that you put over the hole?
I'm a beaver dam guy, straight and true. I've tried all the other ones. I've tried the windlass, those round insulating ones. You know, I know people that bring rugs along to, you know, put under their beaver dam tip-ups. The other ones, you know, the plastic ones, I've had those as well. You know, I try to stay away from brand names, but if you got a mild day and the sun goes down, they freeze in and you break them, trying to pull them up under the frozen ice. And it's like, you know, and now the beaver dams, there's some knockoffs on them that look pretty good. I've been looking at them, at like Fleet Farms and Walmart and that. But I got my 18, 20 beaver dams. You know, I got enough for the entire family to have three each. And boy, I've had my first set 40 years. I've had them repacked a couple of times, but the original three I got, I still use.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And back then, what did you pay for? Hardly anything for them back then. I mean, at least given today's prices.
Remember when I graduated from college at Stevens Point, I went to it was a Tempo store. They had beaver dams on sale, two for $10, and a hand auger for $15. And I still have that hand auger, and I still have those three beaver dam tip-ups. And those are the three that I still use every time I go fishing.
Well, there's a lot of fancier stuff out there now. Actually, I had a guy make for me as a kind of a gift. He made me three that are actually box type. They're a box, and they have a little container inside, a little can you can put some charcoal in it to keep the hole from freezing up. And you cover the, and there's a little flag on the side, and you lift the little trap door up, and you can, you know, drop your bait down, and then you can put the lid back on it. And they work pretty good. They cover the holes. But I still like, I mean, you know, they're big and bulky, so I still like the beaver dam type tip-ups.
Yeah, I have, what do they call those old buckets? It was either a green one called Limey Louie, and I have a yellow one, which is, I don't even know what the yellow one's called. My three beaver dams fit in there. You have a little container for your forceps, extra hooks, you know, your depth finder, you know, even extra pair of gloves in there. And, you know, it's easy going. You carry your tip-ups in one hand and your ice auger in the other.
And away you go.
And away you go. You're pretty mobile fishing.
Skip Sommerfeld, our guest, retired Wisconsin DNR fish biologist. We're talking about ice fishing with him. And if you have some questions or maybe you've got a good story to tell about ice fishing, you can give us a call. I hope you will. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert's our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at ice fishing on the show today with our guest, Skip Sommerfeld, a great fisherman and a retired DNR fish biologist. Hope you'll join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Just a quick reminder, on Friday, even though we're going to have some bad weather, Santa Claus is going to ride his sleigh right onto the top of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've got a flat roof, so he can land there pretty easy. And he'll be on the show with me to answer kids' questions, children's questions about what they want for Christmas. And maybe they'll have some questions for him, maybe what's his favorite cookie or whatever. And your children or your grandchildren or the neighbor kids will all be invited to join in. So you can just call. I think we want parents to help us out a little bit if they've got some small children. you know, to tell us the names and so forth. But that's Friday from 11 to 12:30. We've been doing this for years and years, and it's always a lot of fun for me. I'll probably have a few Santa jokes, too. But that's Friday. This is now. It's Wednesday, and it's our outdoor day where we always talk outdoors and or the environment with our guests today. It's ice fishing, and Jay in Green Lake County has a comment for us. Hi, Jay.
Hey, good morning. I always like it when a muskrat gives you a surprise when you're out there ice fishing, whether they come up the hole and come right in the shack by you or just peek their head through. That's always something exciting.
Has that ever happened to you, Skip?
Oh, I was chuckling to myself there because, yes, it has. Anybody who has fished, you know, on a shallower lake near shore, near reeds, near cattails, I've lost hooks to them because they come pop up, will trip your flag, and when they dive back down, they've actually snagged my hook. I don't know if they grabbed the minnow, but they've snagged, and I've actually had to fight muskrat on a tip-up already.
Oh, my. That'd be another, that'd be quite the fight. I'll tell one story.
I didn't want to catch him. I think he snipped the line with his teeth. But I actually had it happen twice where I lost hooks to muskrats. But, you know, when you see one pop up in a hole, it's like, uh-oh, you're in trouble now. You know, go away.
Well, my favorite ice fishing story I got from a listener who called it in from Lake Winnebago to tell this story. And she said it was true. There was a guy spear fishing for sturgeon, and he had his black Labrador with him. And the Labrador is looking in the hole, too, and the lab jumped in the hole and disappeared in the hole. And, oh, my gosh, he's lost his lab. And it was seconds later, he hears a crash and a holler, and he gets up and he gets out of his shack, and here's a shack tipped over just 30, 40 feet from him, and there's his lab. And another guy was spearfishing and looking down the hole, and suddenly that black lab came out of the hole. And it caught his attention. He backed up quickly and knocked his shanty over. I hope that's a true story.
I can believe it. I just saw one on Facebook a few weeks ago. Somebody was ice fishing. They were bringing in a bluegill of about, you know, a 6-7 inch bluegill, and a northern pike came flying up to the hole trying to grab and flew out of the hole trying to grab that bluegill and sat and flopped on the ice.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
it wasn't even hooked, but it was chasing that bluegill and wanted to eat it so bad.
There you go.
You know, like I said, you can have fishing stories that, you know, are just amazing sometimes.
I had about a 35-inch muskie on the line once, and it was jumping, and it jumped right into the boat. That was obviously in summertime. But let's enough of our stories. Let's go to Ellen in La Crosse. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I have just a quick story to share. I'm not a huge fisherwoman. In fact, I typically try to avoid it. But one of the times I decided to go out with my dad and my boyfriend, and we ran out of worms, and I was just dangling hooks into the hole, and we were catching perch after perch just on bare hooks.
Well, you know, perch, Skip, maybe you can talk about this, because perch, they run in schools, and if you get into one school, you can catch them on practically anything, and here's Ellen getting them on a bare hook.
I've seen that myself. I think anybody who's done any kind of fishing, you know, especially if you use like a gold hook or a red hook, once a fish gets into a feeding frenzy, you know, and it, to me, I think a bare hook probably imitates, you know, like a source of food that they've been eating, like a mini mayfly nymph or water fleas, daphnia, that sort of thing, plankton. Oh. And, you know, as the hooks drifted down, it looked like a piece of food, and they're going to grab it. And it's not surprising. It's, you know, actually a fairly common occurrence to see that.
Ellen, that's a great story. And, Skip, I hadn't thought about it that way, but sure. Why wouldn't they think maybe it was some sort of food coming down? Thank you for that call, Ellen. Jerry in Sun Prairie, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, good morning, Skip. This is kind of, there's two things. One is I think the DNR during the wintertime should maximize the fish loss, or as far as catching, to 15 of either one species or a combination of all three species. Because I always said there's no way you could get that many boats in a small location and catch your limit of bluegill or crappie or during the summertime. During the wintertime, it's a different story. You can be almost, you know, elbow to elbow and that. And so I think the DNR is missing the, you know, just during the wintertime. Summertime, go back to the 25 limit.
Yeah. What do you think, Skip?
I almost 100% agree. For almost my entire career, I was of the opinion we should just have a year-round 10-bag limit on panfish. You know, even with a 25-fish limit, people still go out and double bag when they hit them. But I've been a proponent of 10 bag limits by species or even in aggregate for my entire career. I pushed it. I initiated several regulations on some smaller lakes where we had some very good panfish population where you limited the bag limit to 10. And, you know, another old retired fish biologist out of Hayward, he did some computer modeling or whatever, and he came up with the bag limit should really be like 7 or 8 if you want to maximize, you know, fish production out of a given lake. So I'm in agreement totally that we need to, you know, not just during the winter, but year round, because people can hit bluegill beds in the open water, you know, and they can wipe out a bluegill colony. And people do it. I've seen it done. And it just, you know, it's, you know, yeah, the old thought is if you catch it, you keep it. Well, you know, nowadays is let's preserve the fishery, the resource, and, you know, limit your catch. So I'm in agreement. Let's, you know, not just winter, but year round, 10 bag limit.
Yeah. The last house I owned, our pier was right over a bluegill bedding area. And you could I'd take my daughter out and you'd drop a line in and count to 3. If you got to 3, that was pretty long to wait for a fish. And we would always return most of them back to the water because otherwise, you know, you're pretty soon you're not going to have a bluegill bedding area because there aren't any bluegill left.
Yeah. And it's, you know, those big bull males that set up those nesting areas. And boy, you know, you find them, they're very aggressive and you can catch. I've seen, you know, personally, one of the lakes I fish, I knew where some bluegill beds were. I'd go catch 3 or 4 out of one bed, go to the next. But, and somebody saw me on one of the beds, and that boat was out there. So the lakeshore owner told me that boat was out there for the next 4 or 5 days. And I went back next year, that colony was wiped out.
Yeah.
And that's sad. You know, it's like, come on, people. Yeah. Limit your catch. You know, take what you can eat for a Friday night fish fry. If you need fish, come back, fish again. So
there you go.
Like I said, getting back to it, it's, you know, we need some more restrictive bag limits to limit the catch.
Jerry, thanks again for that comment. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Let's turn to Cliff in Appleton next. Hi, Cliff.
Well, good morning, Larry. Always love your shows. Anyway, I've been walking on water all my life, ice fishing. And, you know, when you mentioned the perch and the, I studied the fish on how they would feed. And I tell you what, perch are really aggressive. You know, when you can see them feeding down there, they come in like just really aggressive. Crappies, they'll bump face to face right at your bait, and neither one of them get it. Bluegills will sit there and suck it in and spit it out. You know, they all have their different ways of feeding. And so another one is when the fish are really picky about feeding, and I'm sure your guest knows about this, it's a goldenrod plant. It gets a bulb on it, and there's a little goldenrod worm in there. It's just a little tiny round worm. And if you put that on a size 18 hook and drop it in there, they're more likely to, oh, here's a little snack. And you can get fish when they're picky about eating in the winter. And then the last thing, I warned my buddy George, the ice holes are all covered with snow, George. Be careful where you're walking. Sure enough, he stepped in one and went down to, you know, pretty much his crotch like a cork. And you know, your guest knows this, when, and you do too, Larry, I'm sure. If you go through the hole with your legs straight, you can almost not get out because you tend to bend your leg to try and get up off the ice. So he's fighting. Down he goes, at least 20 times. Of course, I'm laughing my tail off, you know. Finally, I go over there and pull him up straight so he can get his leg out of there. So he had one dark blue leg and one light blue leg.
Well, Cliff, some good stories and comments there. What do you think, Skip?
I think everybody has had one of those incidents where you've stepped in an old ice hole. And I think as Charlie Behrens even has, he says on some of his comedy shows, Manitowoc Minute, it says, you step in the old ice hole and go ass over tea kettle. Not supposed to swear, I guess. But and also the comment on goldenrod worms, you know, that's always been a historic thing. Especially before modern bait practices, you know, as I was starting to ice fish early, I went out and collected goldenrod, those bulbs. The thing is to cut those open and dig out one little worm. It's a chore.
Yeah. But I did that myself. I did that myself. I'd go in the fall and go on some hikes and walks and grab, you know, look for those bulbs, those goldenrod bulbs, and that's how I, you know, I, most of my bait, my goldenrod grubs for sure. I don't think I ever paid for one because I always went out and you got a couple of things. You wind up with a good walk and then you get some goldenrod grubs. There you go. Sean in Portage, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Sean.
Oh, Larry, it's awesome to be talking to you. I listen to your show all the time, and I got my three-year-old here next to me, and she was excited that you're talking about ice fishing. speaking of kids, I just wanted to bring up the importance of wearing floating bibs, not only for the adults, but if you're taking your kids out there, too. Last year, we had a really scary close call with a friend. We had 20-plus inches of ice, but the day before, we had some rain. And it created a couple of drainage holes across the ice that we didn't see. And while we were sitting up tip-ups, we watched one of the kids' legs slip right in the hole. So we got off the ice and went right to the store and got my 9-year-old a pair of Striker floating bibs.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Skip.
Yes, that is. I agree 100%. When I would take my kids out fishing, I made sure there was, you know, minimum of 8 to 10 inches of solid ice. If it was questionable, no. You know, don't bring them out there. But for almost forever, I would wear a float coat for fishing. you know, which is basically a life jacket. And so if I did go down, you know, I would float. An alternative to do, too, is, you know, the new life preservers that are aerate themselves, you know, if you do go under. But with kids, that could be difficult. But the idea of floating bibs or even I don't know how small they make those life preserver float coats, but, you know, if conditions are questionable, my recommendation is don't even bring the kids out. You know, like you say, you get these drain holes and an 8-inch ice auger hole. If you get water draining down there, or if you get snowfall and water coming up, an 8-inch hole can turn into a 12-inch hole. And, you know, a small kid could almost, you know, go down up to their shoulders in it. And, you know, that's going to scar them for life, really. They won't forget that.
No, you never forget that, going into that cold water like that. That's for sure. Somebody wondered, if you're going to fish, you know, let's say you go to a lake for ice fishing, and how do you know where to go or where to start?
That's always the big question. It depends, you know, are they going to go for walleyes? Are they going to go for northern pike? You know, the first thing, you know, is have an idea, you know, hopefully the DNR website has most lake maps available, you know, and if you're going to look for northern pike, you know, you got to look at, you know, the access areas, what access you have out to the lake. And then if you have the lake map, you know, for northern pike, I usually try to fish anywhere. You can go as shallow as 2 feet of water, you know, and out to about 8 feet. If you can find any kind of weed bed, green weeds, you know, set your tip ups there with a big golden shiner or, you know, a large sucker. I've seen for northern pike, you can fish anywhere from, you know, basically sometimes lay your bait on the bottom to a foot underneath the ice. I know anglers that just always set foot underneath the ice and they'll catch pike as well. And, you know, the kind of side story I'm sure you've heard is one of the up-and-coming baits for northern pike are hot dogs.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, hot dogs for northern pike. And personally, I found they work. I don't know what a hot dog imitates, but...
Well, do you hook the hot dog up like you would, say, a shiner or something?
Yes, what I do is, for most of my tip-ups, I use a treble hook with one of the hooks cut off, so it's basically a double hook. I'll just hook the hot dog right through the middle with the two hooks through it and, you know, put it a foot off. I like fishing pike a foot off the bottom. And like I said, some people fish foot underneath. Pike's eyes are on the top of their head, so that it seems they're looking up. But I know they fed off the bottom as well. So, but, you know, I'm sure people are listening that have used hot dogs for bait and have caught bunny. I've got pictures of pike with a hot dog in their throat that I've caught.
Diana in Green Bay emailed us, Skip. She knows the ice conditions up north are not good right now, but wonders about the impact you think of this upcoming, you know, couple of days here where we have some really cold weather and snow, how that's going to affect lake conditions up north. She and her husband have a cabin north of Crandon, and we're planning on doing some ice fishing after Christmas.
Boy, it's going to be, they're going to have to wait and see. What I found is, you know, they're saying we're going to have some 40 to 50 mile an hour winds. That will help ice conditions, because if you, before I left yesterday up north, we had 4 to 5 inches of light, fluffy snow. But if you get strong winds, it'll blow the snow off the lake, and, you know, that'll allow the sub-zero temperatures that we're going to have for the next few days to freeze the cover or freeze the top layer, maybe that slush layer, and even firm up underneath. But it, you know, it all depends. It's wait and see what the conditions are going to be. Like I said, I saw on Facebook last night that a local, guide sport shop is canceled all his ice guide trips till further notice because of the ice conditions are just bad. On Sunday, the lake I got a cottage on, Butternut Lake out of Park Falls, I watched a couple of guys try to walk off the boat landing. They were knee deep in water and slush. They got about 40 yards out. It looked like they drilled a few holes, turned around and come back off.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they fished. And the usage on the lake, I can see about half the lake from my cottage. There's virtually been ice pressure non-existent. A few people trudge out. I can see they're about knee deep in snow, probably going through slush as well. And the thing is, if you do want to go out, as soon as you get to the place you want to fish, if you got a cottage, walk out on the ice, pack down some trails, maybe even take a shovel, shovel out the areas that you want to fish, or just push the snow off the top. And if we're going to, with our sub-zero temperatures, they're forecasted for the week, it sounds like, is you'll freeze down those areas and you'll be able to fish them. And that's what I've done in past years when we've had bad slush conditions. I'll pack a trail down, clear off areas where I want to put my tip-ups, and within the day, 2 days, your trail's frozen, your spots are frozen, you'll be able to fish.
And then you need to get out there before somebody else beats you to it. On that note, Skip, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to another visit from you down the road. Thanks, Skip.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Larry.
Skip Sommerfeld, retired Wisconsin DNR fish biologist. Well, the ice fishing isn't great in northern Wisconsin because of the things that Skip talked about. But you know what? There is a whole lot more to do if you're not an ice fisherman here in winter in Wisconsin. And we're going to be talking about some great events that you might want to take part in. Coming up next, our guest, Ann Sayers. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.